If I can have your attention, we will go ahead and get started with our program this morning. I want to welcome all of you to another meeting of the First Friday Breakfast Club, an association of gay and bisexual men and the largest private breakfast club in the state of Iowa. And we've been around and functioning for, since 1996. Someone asked this morning what time we were first formed. We've been formed and giving out scholarships since 1996, and at this point we've given scholarships to Iowa high school students regardless of their gender or sexual orientation, totaling more than $250,000. And I wanted to share with you this morning a note that I've received from Jacob Cash, who received our scholarship this year, among others. He says, "Dear First Friday Breakfast Club, I am sending you this card to thank you so very much for selecting me to accept the FFBC scholarship. My family is not the most financially stable, so your support means the absolute world to me. Without your help, I'm not sure if I would be attending the University of Northern Iowa this fall, so thank you so very much again." That's what our scholarship is all about. The other power of our scholarship, which is less obvious than the reward for a student like Jacob, is that it purchases us a ticket to their high school graduations, where we have representatives present the scholarship at their high school graduation in front of audiences oftentimes that think they've never seen a real live gay person before. So it's a healthy educational opportunity for those audiences, and the anecdotes that have come back from those experiences have been heartwarming for sure. With standing ovations and applause, the likes of which you would not have expected when you go to some of these smaller Iowa communities. So we're doing some great outreach there. It is our tradition to ask those or invite those who are here for the first time to introduce themselves. It's not a requirement. It's relatively painless. If there are those who are here for the first time, or even those who are back after being gone for a long time, you would be welcome to stand up and give us your name so that we are either introduced or reminded.
My name is Matthew. I've been here for a few years. I've been invited many times by many people.
Okay, welcome. Austin.
And I'm Austin. I just moved to Winterset, so I'm new here. My friend just got pretty cool to come.
So, welcome. Yeah. Welcome. Very good. Welcome. Anyone else? Well, those of you who have been invited multiple times, like you, Matthew, it's my fault because at every one of our meetings, I invite members to look around the room and see people who aren't here that probably ought to be and extend them an invitation. So it's my fault, and thank you for waking up early enough this morning to be here. Several announcements. Of course, there is the book exchange. It's on this grand piano back here, and there is a wide variety of literature there that you can choose from. Borrow a book. There's no checkout system. If you have books that you're willing to share, bring them, and we will get them in circulation. I thank my partner, Scott Cupio, for helping coordinate the book exchange. I invite you to check out our website. It is constantly being updated, and if you miss a speaker or you want to hear one of our speakers again, our speakers are recorded and the audio recording is included on our website, clear back quite a long time. Also, our newsletters are on the website that are at least 6 months back. So it's an archive available. And as you may be interested in knowing, at One Institute, which is a subdivision of UCLA, there is an archive of gay literature, and all of our newsletters back to inception in 1996 are on file there with the archivist at UCLA. So I invite you to check out our website. There are lots of resources there. If there are others that you look around the room and don't see here who ought to be, if you'll get those names to me, I'll extend the invitation, or you can extend the invitation yourselves so that they would be participating here. Those of you who are here for the first time, welcome, and I hope you have a good experience and that you come back again. Let's see, a few minor announcements. One, our next board meeting is next Wednesday, the 12th. At Scott's in my home, 2924 Druid Hill. Any member is welcome to attend. And if you're planning to attend and need directions, contact me or Scott, and we'll give you easy-to-follow directions to get there. That's at 6:15 on Wednesday. Our newsletter copy deadline is going to be this coming Monday, the 10th. So those of you who are regular contributors to the newsletter, that's our deadline. Any of you who have not made contributions to the newsletter are welcome to. If you have something on your mind or you've had an interesting recent experience that might be of interest to other people, we'd love to have you submit an article and we'll get it in great shape and make you look really good when it gets published in our newsletter. So your contributions are encouraged. Also, on July the 22nd, from 7 till 10 in the evening, is the jointly sponsored FFBC Prose Party, and that will be at the home of Alan Vanderlinden and Michael Thompson, 7500 Benton. It's just north and a little west of the ice rink, and it's been a great tradition, Alan. Thank you very much, and we're looking forward to that again this year. All paid members of FFBC get into that event for free. So it's kind of a bonus included in your membership. Next, Alan Vanderlinden, I will call on you to talk about the event on August the 5th.
If you are a senior, planning to be a senior,
and it starts at 8:30 and goes until 2:30 in the afternoon on August the 5th. And with that, I will turn to Brad Holland, who is going to introduce our speaker for this morning. Brad.
Good morning. I am fully aware that many of you will be very familiar with this morning's speaker, particularly those folks over here at this table who are a little... They're wanting me to be tell a joke, and sorry, Lauren, I really just don't have one. But it sounds like maybe some of those people might be ribbing you later. But here, let me take a moment or two to share some highlights. This morning, Lauren A. Olson, MD, a board-certified psychiatrist in practice for more than 40 years, will be our speaker. He is a nationally recognized expert in the area of mature gay men and has spoken to groups across the country and appeared on ABC TV's Good Morning America, in addition to giving numerous national, regional, and local television, radio, and print interviews. Lauren is a regular blogger on HuffingtonPost.com and Psychology Today. Lauren has authored the book, Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight, that was originally released in 2011 and has been updated to a second edition released earlier in 2017. And I'm quite certain Lauren might be willing to speak on the evolution of that book with us this morning. A little about the book. One of the reviews said, "For those who have struggled with coming out, Olson's expert combination of private struggle and professional reflection will prove invaluable. His down-to-earth conversational tone makes the work even more accessible to read." Lauren lives in the Des Moines area with his partner of 30 years, Doug, who he married in 2009, following the Iowa Supreme Court's Varnum favorable ruling on same-sex marriage. He was previously married to his wife, or former wife, Lynn, and is the proud father of two daughters and grandfather of six. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Lauren Olson.
Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this morning. Sometimes when I tell people how old I am, I'm 74, they say, "You look good for 74. And then, you know, I initially felt pretty good about that. But then I began to hear, "You look good for 74. You know? And it sort of felt like they were saying, "You don't sweat much for a fat man." So, I blew out my knee having sex. I know all of you wish you were me right now. But it wasn't like that. It wasn't really Iron Man sex. It was ordinary sex, the kind of sex you have with a partner you've been with for 20 years. It was Sunday night after the news. And, you know, I kind of wanted to do it, but I kind of wanted to get it over with, too, because I had a busy day the next day. So I hurt my knee. But it was really my ego that was damaged. I began to feel old and fragile. And kind of worn out, you know. So I called the insurance company and I said to the woman, I blew out my knee. And she said, "Oh, how did that happen?" I said, having sex. And there was kind of a long pause. And then she said, "Well, was it an accident?" And I said, "No, I intended to have sex." And so the phone really went pretty dead at that point. And she said, I don't think I have any more questions. And they did pay for my bills. But I would say to you, are you ready to face late life this morning? You know, there are 10,000 boomers a day turning 65. And we have something like 1.5 million boomers now, and it will double in the next few years. And I would look around the room and say that many of you are close to my age. And in 10 years, a lot of us are going to be living in some kind of a long-term care situation. Not easy to think about. A lot of you are what some sociologists would call visibly resourced. You know, you've had a good education, you have decent jobs, you may have retirement funds, you know, you feel fairly secure. But I would remind you that you're only a very small slice of the LGBT community. there are lots of people out there who are much less secure in many ways than you are. And we'll talk a little more about that. Well, when I was 60 was a tough time for me. I had been plagued with having gynecomastia since I was a kid. You know, gynecomastia are man boobs. And I always hated it because it sort of like it revealed about me a secret that I didn't want anybody to know. And so I was 60-ish, and I finally had some money, and I thought, well, I can have it, see a plastic surgeon. So a patient of mine was a nurse who worked for a plastic surgeon. I said, who's the best plastic surgeon? And she said, oh, are you going to do something about that hooding over your eyes? And I said, hooding? What do you mean, hooding? And she said, well, you know, it's all that baggy skin that hangs down over your eyes there, so you can't see very well. Well, I didn't know I had hooding. You know, and after that, that's all I could see. So I went home that night. I was pretty upset. And Doug and I were going out for dinner. I backed the car out of the garage and backed into a tree. And Doug's like, where the hell are you going? And I'm saying, I can't see. I've got hooding. But, you know, when you get to be my age, there are a few problems. One of them is that you dribble after you pee, right? You know, and you can stand at that urinal and shake your dick and shake your dick and shake your dick. And as soon as you put it away, the last few drops of piss are going to go down your pant leg. So I had visions of smelling like a nursing home. And I was having a bit of difficulty with erectile dysfunction. Just generally not feeling so good about the future. But this, there were three things that happened to me, and they all happened to happen at Primetimers. The first one was that I spoke in Houston to a group there, and when I was done, this man raised his hand in the air, and he said, I'm 82, and this is the best time in my life. And I thought, what does he know that I need to figure out? The second thing happened was at a retreat in Oklahoma City, and I was going back to my room, and I was wearing my swimming trunks, and there was this much younger, handsome guy coming toward me down the sidewalk. And as we got even with each other, he put his hand on my chin here and ran it all the way down to my naughty parts, and he said, delicious. And, you know, we just kept walking past each other, and I'm thinking, did he see what I see every day? You know? And the truth is, he didn't. You know, I see myself as a fat old man when I look in the mirror, and he saw somebody who was cuddly. So it kind of changed my perception of how I felt about myself. The third thing that happened was I was in St. Louis with a group, and after I'd spoken, several of us went out to dinner. There were about eight of us sitting it was a beautiful night, and we were on the outside patio, and the restaurant wasn't in any hurry to have us leave. So we sat there for about 3 hours and had a few glasses of wine, shared a lot of stories and a lot of laughs. And when we got up to leave, one of the guys said, I don't want this evening to end. And it was transformational. Because I realized then, I forgot to take my medicine, that's why I'm crying. I realized then that I'd spent my life running from appointment to appointment to meeting to meeting to seeing patient after patient. And I kind of missed the point about what life's all about. It was about these times of spending like this, where we spend time with people that we care about and where we You know, we grow up with a feeling of shame about our sexuality. But in a situation like this, the shame disappears. When we're in an environment where we have acceptance by other people, the shame is gone. But I'd like to shift gears here a little bit. And, you know, there are three things that contribute to successful aging: finances, healthcare, and relationships. Finances, about nearly 50% of LGBT people are going to have to continue to work till at least 70. And for women, it's even higher because they've had economic disadvantages through the years. But many of us lost some of the benefits that married couples had in the way, and we weren't well prepared. Some of us thought we were going to die, and there was no reason to prepare for another 20 years. And, you know, at this point in my life, I'm 74, my life expectancy is at least another 12 years. I'm considered a survivor. You too, Jonathan. Yeah. You know, we've lived long enough to prove that we've escaped some of the problems, and we now have 12 years. And a lot of us didn't think at this point in our lives that we were going to potentially have another 10 or 20 years of retirement. I want to tell you about Woody Baldwin. Woody Baldwin is the founder of Prom Timers. When I met him, he was 95. He was living in an assisted living place in Austin, Texas. And he was very much alert and intact at 95. But he had some medical problems and required 24-hour care. And it was a very nice assisted living place. But he was not happy. He felt that he had to de-gay his place in order to assure himself that he would be well cared for by the people who were taking care of him. So he'd been in a long-term relationship with a man for many, many years. He didn't even have pictures of Sean around his room. And he was afraid to talk on the phone to any of his old primetimer friends. When I saw him, I talked the attendant into leaving, and during our conversation we laughed and we talked, and he said, "You know, I just hate the fact that somebody's always around me." He says, "I can't even make a dirty phone call if I want to." You know, but lots of people who are going into these extended care facilities or any kind of institutional care are recloseting themselves in order to protect themselves from the discrimination that's there. Most healthcare institutions don't have any LGBT inclusive policies. And I have just finished working on a chapter for a book that is going to be the curriculum for training of healthcare professionals, and I did the chapter on aging. So that's part of the reason my mind is on this right now. There is a good study that was done not long ago that says that people who have a medical companion who go to their medical appointments get better medical care. And it was a well-researched study because the companion there is able to listen, provide information, provide transportation, follow up on things. And if we look at heterosexual couples, about 75% of men in that situation are living with a spouse. For gay people, there's only about 35% of us who have a person who's living with us. So many gay people go to their healthcare appointments without a companion. Healthcare has failed us in many ways. They haven't recognized our families of choice. Their staffs are not trained in LGBTQ issues. Environments are often inhospitable. And often we're prevented from having our companions and friends as decision makers, or even sometimes visitors. I'd like to talk about relationships, the third element of successful aging. It's a critical factor in successful aging. Most people don't want to admit they're lonely. They feel like they've failed in one of life's fundamental issues or domains. Loneliness is not the same thing as depression. Loneliness is a greater risk to health than cigarette smoking, alcohol, or almost any of the other healthcare risks. But it's never considered as one of the causes of health problems. It even leads to tooth decay. And it accelerates cognitive decline. Loneliness leads to more hospital admissions and nursing home admissions. So these are sobering thoughts. And I think the thing I would like to challenge you with is that we need to begin to advocate for old people as well as young people. There's a group in Des Moines called the Des Moines Age Friendly Initiative. Are any of you familiar with that? I was not. Good. One person here. Their mission is to develop policies, programs, services, and infrastructure related to the physical and social environment designed to enable the 50-plus population. I kind of laughed about 50-plus. But that was their cutoff. To live in security, enjoy good health, and continue to participate in employment, civic, cultural, and social life in a meaningful way. Well, there's a 30-member advisory council that is planning for healthy aging and here in Des Moines. And we didn't even know about it. You know, and why aren't we at that table? So my challenge to you today is to say, I think we need to get One Iowa, we need to get Primetimers, we need to get First Friday's Breakfast Club together to form a coalition about LGBT aging so we can begin to be politically active to advocate for our role in the future of Des Moines. So, I'll close with that. You know, I guess it's not all bad news. There are opportunities that come with aging, and that was what I learned from that old man in Houston, that, you know, as we get older, we have more discretionary time. We can, you know, we give up on doing things that we don't want to do so much anymore. I don't wear neckties anymore. I don't go to networking cocktail parties anymore. I mean, what's the point of networking at this point in my life? I don't do some of those, particularly a cocktail party where I knew I wasn't going to like anybody now. But, you know, we feel like when we're young, we have to do those kinds of things. And now that Doug and I are moving into a town, we're freeing ourselves from all the things that we thought we had to have. And it looks like, you know, there's a certain emptiness about striving to always reach a higher level, to get to a better place. We were talking about it at the table earlier. There comes a kind of freedom of getting rid of some of that stuff that we thought we had to have. And, you know, I have a junk drawer at home that's full of brass rings that I thought I had to capture on my way up. Those things are rather meaningless now. What's important to me is I have the people in my life that I care about and that I have those kinds of associations with other people. Time is different now for me. That time carried a sense of urgency when I was young. I always had, you know, what time is my next appointment? What time is my next patient? Now I look at time as something to experience. So thank you for experiencing this time with me. And I'll entertain some questions.
You're talking talking about loneliness makes me realize that I didn't mention in the one I was seeing your summit that there will be a whole session on dealing with loneliness, which that's a big topic. And you're talking about this all tied together. You know, how is spending time that's meaningful? There will be a whole session on that.
Good. Good. I'm glad to hear that. It's a big issue, you know. Like I say, you people are motivated. You get out, you have a good shot at successful aging. But we all know those people who are not a part of our community, that are out there, that are isolated, alone, and may have fewer social skills and be uncomfortable walking into a room like this. We need to advocate for them as well. They're certainly a part of our community. Any other questions?
We have a president that is about our age, and there's quite a bit on the public record about himself that he has disclosed. I'm curious to know if you would need to know anything more, and if so, what, in order to make a diagnosis of his mental health.
I made that early on. Let me speak in hypotheticals. because ethics doesn't allow me to speak more specifically, but hypothetically, he's a narcissistic personality disorder. the problem with that is that personality disorders are not very treatable. So people talk about, you know, he needs to be seen and evaluated and treated. But if you look at the criteria in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, he checks every box, you know, for that. He lacks the capacity for empathy, and everything comes back to him. So, if I'm stepping on toes, I don't care. I feel very strongly that he's a dangerous man. And I think, you know, that it's a scary time for us because everything that we saw from the time of marriage equality on, you know, in terms of the advances that we received, I think we're in danger of losing all of those. You know, his only policy really is anything Obama did, I'm going to go against it. And that's the only focus, I think, of his administration. Many of us who are older become tired of being advocates. We fought hard for a lot of the things. It's hard to generate enough energy, maybe, but we need to be out and vocal. And one of the reasons I suggested that we form this coalition is because I know as a 501(c), we can't be politically active in the same way, but a task force or an organization like that could be very active politically, and we need to begin to do more. One of the major issues, I think, is that we need to tell our stories so people know that there are old gay men and women and come to know us as human beings instead of the perverts and pathological deviants that we were called for so many years. Yes,
I'm
Matt.
I'm supposed to remind you that you're supposed to plug your book while you're here.
Did I forget that? I have a few copies back. I would also say that you can order it on Amazon, and if you order it on Amazon Smile, a bit of money comes back to you. I've got some copies here. They're $15 a piece, two for $25. This is a better book than the first edition. I did add a chapter in there about the opportunities of aging and the issues related to aging. And the other thing I would say is not just to plug the book, but if you have read it and like it, or if you do read it and like it, put a word out on Amazon under their recommendations, because that helps to raise it up on the algorithm so that it's recommended to other people as well. So far, 13 reviews, 5 stars. All of them, so I'm very pleased with that. Yes?
It's my understanding that per capita, Iowa has one of the oldest populations in the United States. And I'm curious if we can actually become leaders. this area rather than followers? And where's the most work being done in this area?
Well, I think that there really has not been a lot of work done anywhere. I think it's just becoming. The senior summit that's coming up is a good start and that kind of thing, and raising the issues and talking about it. But largely, we're an invisible part of the community. The thing that always bothers me most about Iowa is there's so many people in small towns who live out there, and their only connection is through the internet, and they're very isolated and alone. And I would say, it's important to remember that the suicide rate for gay men is 3 times the general population. For trans people, it's 8 times. So we've got a lot of issues that we need to deal with. But I think we just need to get active and speak out. Silence equal death. We all went through that during the AIDS crisis, and it's, I think, an issue that we have among us right now. Yeah, Charles.
A lot of things change as you get older, and we were not in a position to deal with those in the past. I never took any care of it. Things in my life have changed that I had no idea. There's a certain sense of ostracization from your own community. And I had no clue that would ever happen. I think Prime Timers is one of the best things that came along. I really have enjoyed it. I miss a lot of it because I have congestive heart failure, so I can't drive anymore, having driven and fallen asleep. That it's not very convenient. I would try to avoid that, and it makes it more difficult to get around and see other people in the world. I have also moved about 2 weeks ago to a place that is able to take care of people that need assistance in living. And actually, I pride myself on saying I don't need assistance. And maybe I don't need it, but it certainly is nice.
Yeah, I think actually that theme comes up over and over. As I was doing the research for this chapter, I was writing that there is a sense of shame about having to admit that we need somebody to help us get groceries or to get us to our appointments. And so oftentimes people who have some difficulty doing that are afraid to reach out to other people who might be willing. And one of the things I tell my patients is if you need something, remember that there's another person out there who needs to be of service to other people. There's somebody out there who needs that satisfaction of participating and giving to another person, and you're denying them that opportunity. But unless we have some kind of a clearinghouse and knowing for that, when we're in a group like this, we kind of notice who's missing. Jonathan mentioned that before, and we have a sense of that. But there's a lot of people who are ashamed to ask for anything, and particularly the older we get, the more that's true. Jonathan, are we out of time?
Unless there's more questions.
Thanks.
We really appreciate it, Lauren, and it is our tradition to give a token of appreciation to our speakers, which is a recording of the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus, which I'll have for you after this meeting. Lauren Olson represents my last ditch effort not to be gay. May have been a poor choice, but I started with Nick Torme. I was still on the Des Moines School Board at the time, so fairly high profile and paranoid about dealing with this issue. And so I contacted Nick because I knew him and considered him a pretty good psychologist. And we met under the bridge over by the Botanical Center so I could talk to him in a car away from anybody else. And we agreed that any professional file that he would keep on me would be under a pseudonym. We chose Bill Johnson, William Johnson, Jonathan Wilson, you get it? I mean, it wasn't terribly creative, but it was. If he were to drop dead and someone were going through his files, I didn't want there to be a Jonathan Wilson file there at the time. So counseling with Nick failed, and I still was struggling with this issue and decided, well, I need to up the ante a little bit and go and see an actual psychiatrist, which at the time was a big deal for me. It was sort of an admission of failure, weakness, and inability. And I went to see Lauren and talked to him as my last ditch effort. Turns out Lauren was a recruiter. But I did go away feeling a lot better about myself.
It was an easy sale.
Just because you're so cuddly, that's the deal. So anyway, I want to give a very high recommendation to Lauren Olson and to thank him. Not posthumously, but to thank him for his help when I needed it. If any of you want some counseling on the cheap, his books are available back here on the registration desk. If you want some counseling on the cheaper, you will go to the Senior Summit on August the 5th. He's not going to be presenting there, but he's going to be there, and you can take him off to the side and get some real quick short-term help. And if you want it even cheaper, just wait a little while, and his book is going to be in our lending library, because I have it, and I'm going to put it in our lending library. So you have all kinds of opportunities to get some quick and easy counseling. And with that, I will turn to our future speakers. On August the 4th, our next meeting will be Ryan Berg. He is also an author of No House to Call My Home, which is an account of transgendered young people who are rendered homeless at an alarming rate, and his study into that. In September is National Food Month, and our speaker will be Michelle Book, who is the head of Food Pantry of Iowa. In October, our speaker will be Mark Stringer. He's been the senior pastor at the First Unitarian Church, and he has now become the executive director of ACLU Iowa. He has spoken to us twice before, among the most well-prepared, well-presented speakers that we have ever had. And so you can look forward to his presentation in October and his new work with ACLU. And with that, I want to thank you all again for being here and remind you of the books that are available on the registration desk, and I recommend them. And I look forward to seeing you on August 4th. Thank you very much. A lot of fun. There you go. Thanks, man.